Let's get physical, physical. I wanna get physical. Let's get into physical. Let me hear your body talk. Your body talk. Let me hear your body talk.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, so we're gonna talk a little bit about exercise today. What the hell? But briefly speaking of not being fit, I saw a recent movie from 2024 with the kind of ever-expanding Russell Crowe. Speaking of large objects, fun fact, the sun is like 400 times bigger than the moon, but the moon is about 400 times closer to Earth. So to us dumbasses, they look about the same size. But anyway, the movie is called Sleeping Dogs. It's right up my alley. It's about a former detective with memory loss who looks into an old case to uncover some secrets. And the movie is kind of reminiscent of the often mentioned Memento, directed by Christopher Nolan with Guy Pearce. You know, you take one part mystery, one part memory loss, and shit, I'm on board. And I do really like Russell Crowe, but at this point, it's kind of like Russell Crowe ate another Russell Crowe. I mean, he's pretty beefy at this point, but he still has a badass vibe, and there's no denying his acting chops. Speaking of chops, Russell Crowe is another one of those actors that when I see him, I want to eat a steak and have a martini. And he's kind of like an old school guy. They really don't kind of make people like they used to. I mean, William Holden, Robert Mitchum, Lee Marvin, George C. Scott, just old school dudes, tough, fucking manly. And speaking of Sleeping Dogs, there's a goofy movie from 1991 called Where Sleeping Dogs Lie with Dylan McDermott, Tom Sizemore, and Sharon Stone. Kind of a bad noir about a mystery writer. I haven't seen it in forever, but hey, it's got the intense, troubled, and deceased actor Tom Sizemore, so it can't be so bad. He was famously in Michael Mann's 1995 Heat, which my buddy Buckley is obsessed with. Also 1998 Saving Private Ryan, directed by Steven Spielberg, and Oliver Stone's Born on the 4th of July from 1989. And I know Born on the 4th of July was a big deal at the time, but I always found it to be kind of corny, to be honest. And anyway, interestingly, Dylan McDermott's mom was actually murdered by her gangster boyfriend in 1967. I think at first they thought it was maybe like an accident or stuff, but they realized it was actually murder. The gangster guy had died earlier, though, so there was no justice to be had. And I saw Dylan McDermott at a Chevron on Santa Monica Boulevard getting cozy with a girl probably more than half his age. Oh, well, lifestyles of the rich and famous, right? As Robin Leach used to say, champagne wishes and caviar dreams. Quickly back to Russell Crowe. He was in a funny movie from 2011 with Ryan Gosling called The Nice Guys, directed by my hero Shane Black. They play two goofball detectives in 1970s Los Angeles. It's very Hollywood, a little sleazy, kind of involving the movie business, a little noir. But as with all of Shane Black's stuff, it just has crackerjack writing. There's a funny scene where they're like asking some kid about some information. And the little kid is like, "You guys want to see my dick?" And Ryan Gosling says, "Nobody wants to see your dick, dude." Shane Black's directorial debut from 2005 is a kind of a neo-noir comedy crime movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Shit, this one's great. It has a similar kind of vibe and energy to The Nice Guys. It has Robert Downey Jr. and the legend Val Kilmer. Robert Downey Jr. is kind of this petty criminal turned wannabe actor who teams up with Gay Perry, a private eye played by Val Kilmer, who is hired to kind of give Robert Downey Jr. some experience and some material for a possible movie role. It's got murders and mayhem. It looks great. And it's just got some amazing dialogue and that patented wit of Shane Black. Okay, where were we? Oh, yeah, physical. Let's get physical. So aside from supplements, movies, the occasional girlfriend, and the occasional drug problem, one constant in my life for the last 20 years has been exercise. I didn't exercise really when I was in my 20s. I was working a lot. I mean, you know, an occasional tennis match or something, but that was about it. My old girlfriend, Mary, was really into running. And after we broke up, I was kind of a devastated mess and I needed some kind of goal or transformation. And I was like, okay, let's see. She was a runner. So fuck it. I'll become one too. I'm going to be faster than her. And a really quick, pretty cool quote on running by Mina Samuels. "Our running shoes have magic in them. The power to transform a bad day into a good day, frustration into speed, self-doubt into confidence, chocolate cake into muscles." So I just kind of started running. I joined a gym, and then I also love to run on the still beloved median on San Vicente Boulevard in Los Angeles, getting up early as hell and running on San Vicente and then getting on Ocean Avenue, running, looking at the Pacific Ocean. Man, there's nothing better. So as I started running and getting better at it or more experienced or whatever, I started signing up for races and stuff, 5Ks to start, about 3.1 miles, and then 10Ks and so on. It was great to kind of sign up for races and stuff and train and, look forward to running the race. You know, I was pretty depressed at the time, so just having some kind of goal was like, perfect. And I wasn't super fast, but, decent enough, maybe 7.5 minute miles, 7:45, something like that. Eventually, I was like, okay, what's the next step? Let's sign up for a marathon. I'll be doing a podcast on paranoid thrillers, but do check out the previously mentioned Marathon Man from 1976, directed by John Schlesinger with Dustin Hoffman, Laurence Olivier, and the fucking man, Roy Scheider. It has the immortal dental scene where Laurence Olivier does some sadistic dentistry on Dustin Hoffman with the unforgettable line, "Is it safe?" Which is such a great sentence. It's like, it's got such like depth to it. It's like, what is it? Is it a person? Is it a bomb? Is it a diamond? And is it safe or is it in danger or just awesome? And just a great often quoted moment of insight on suspense is from the larger than life, literally Alfred Hitchcock, to paraphrase, there's a bomb underneath the table between us. Nothing happens. And then boom, there's an explosion. The public is surprised. But prior, this has been an absolutely ordinary scene. Now let us take a suspense situation. The bomb is underneath the table, and the public knows it. In these conditions, this same innocuous conversation becomes fascinating because the public is participating in the secret. End quote. I mean, sometimes a bomb unexpectedly going off fits the bill, but anticipating something is what makes the suspense and the tension. So yeah, I signed up for the Culver City Marathon, and actually that dude that co-created South Park and the Book of Mormon was there, Matt Stone. And I remember I saw the original Book of Mormon in New York City. I saw it maybe a month after it opened. I remember the actress Lauren Hutton was there. She was kind of sitting close to me. But anyway, a very funny play. The South Park guys obviously have limitless talent. And I still listen to the song Man Up from the play. And here's a little bit of that. Man up, he had to man up. So he crawled up on that cross and he stuck it out. And he manned up, Christ, he manned up. And taught us all what real manning up is about. And I hadn't done the traditional training for a marathon. I maybe ran 12 or so miles at the most once. But on race day, I was like, fuck it. And I got through it okay. I think my time was like 3:36. I wouldn't do another one, but I'm so glad I did one. I mean, it really pushes you to your limits and it shows you what you can do. It becomes almost like spiritual or meditative after a while. And yes, that runner's high can be a real thing and it feels great. Here's kind of a cool quote from Kristen Armstrong. There's something magical about running. After a certain distance, it transcends the body. Then a bit further, it transcends the mind. A bit further yet, and what you have before you, laid bare, is the soul. And there's a classic British movie from 1962 directed by Tony Richardson called The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner with the interesting Tom Courtenay as a petty thief who takes up long distance running. It's so British, a bit slow, but worth watching. The kind of amazing metal band Iron Maiden has a kind of great song called The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner from the 1986 album Somewhere in Time. Iron Maiden was kind of legendary. I remember all the stoner kids in high school had like Iron Maiden patches on their jean jackets. I mean, I kind of grew up on Iron Maiden. I wasn't a completist, but it kind of helped me cope with some of my teenage angst at the time, kind of listening to their music. I mean, I love Anne Murray, but sometimes you need Iron Maiden. And as Kurt Cobain memorably said, there's that fucking word again, memorably said on the song Serve the Servants from 1990's album In Utero, teenage angst has paid off well. Now I'm bored and old. I remember I did a 10-mile run at a winery in Paso Robles once. Oh my God, it was a totally awesome scenic run, and I'll never forget near the end of it, there was a fence on my right, like a little farm area or something, and this horse like galloped up and started kind of running with me, like next to me, kind of at my pace. It was a weird kind of mystical moment, to be honest. I was like, oh, fuck yes. And I did this insane run in Santa Barbara. It was a half marathon, tough as shit. I somehow did it three times. Let me tell you, heartbreak can be some serious fuel. But yeah, it starts at sea level and you run gradually up this hill to like 4,000 feet. I mean, talk about challenging. That one was bordering on insanity. But hey, I did it. And yeah, three times it was enough. But I remember one of the times I did it, I had actually been taking a small course of like anabolic steroids. I was so low at the time and I was just depressed, almost suicidal-ish. And I had read steroids could like give you a mental lift and a boost. And I was like, fuck it, man. I'm going to try anything at this point. I mean, it did give me a kind of an uneasy energy and I put on some muscle, but you know, I look kind of stupid. I mean, I wasn't like real huge, but I just looked better on the thin side. I was kind of bloated and, you know, I did feel good. But again, it was kind of like a false energy that isn't naturally generated. You know, there's something dirty about it. So, yeah, that was a dumb experiment. But, you know, my life has kind of been a series of dumb experiments. And there wasn't as much information on steroids, and you kind of have to be a fucking specialist to successfully come off steroids, because basically your nuts shut down when you take testosterone. Your brain goes, hey, we've got plenty of testosterone. We can shut down our natural production. So after steroids, you'll gradually lose your gains, and often you'll feel like utter garbage after. I mean, you have to take female fertility drugs and like aromatase inhibitors sometimes. And whenever you see an athlete test positive for HCG, this human chorionic gonadotropin, or clomiphene, you know that person had done steroids and was trying to jumpstart his own production again. It's kind of funny, you know, these massive manly men and they're taking these female fertility drugs. But anyway, I had a rough recovery because of my biological stupidity, but I got through it. But yeah, I wouldn't advise it. And I'm not the biggest fan of Howard Stern's like more crude stuff, but he is witty as hell and he's a great interviewer. And it's funny, I'll never forget when a bulked up Joe Piscopo, he was like an actor, he was on Saturday Night Live for a bit and did a few movies. But anyway, he was all muscular and he came on the show and Howard Stern just took an expert jab at Joe Piscopo's kind of not flourishing career at the time. Howard Stern says, you better start lifting some scripts, which is just fucking spot on. Now let's briefly touch on roid rage, which is the kind of belief that when you take testosterone, you can become like an aggressive, impulsive, total asshole. But I think it's more like steroids amplify the type of person you inherently are. I mean, if you're an asshole, yeah, you're going to be a bigger one. But it's kind of a myth. But you live long enough and you see what we thought used to be good or bad is now the opposite. It's like eggs used to be deadly and now they're, you know, considered a really healthy food, or all fat is evil. But now it's like, no, some fat is good. And the only kind of consistent thing has been, you know, smoking is bad. Although shit, back in the day, they used to have advertisements where like, you know, dentists and doctors recommend a certain brand of cigarettes or whatever. And there's actually just a comical 1950s ad. It's like a print ad with a singer smoking a cigarette. And the caption kind of says, my voice is my living. So it's only common sense that I smoke this cigarette that agrees with my throat. Camel. I mean, that's great stuff looking at it now. It's like, holy shit. And I grew up when you could still smoke in bars. But can you imagine? People used to smoke in fucking airplanes, movie theaters, and restaurants. I was never a huge smoker. But I lived in Chicago for like 10 months and I smoked Camel filters back then. And the occasional pack of Dunhill Reds, kind of a tip of the hat to Hunter S. Thompson. Basically, in Chicago at the time, it just kind of was a rule to drink and smoke. But what a fantastic town. I mean, it's definitely, it's my kind of town, to quote Frank Sinatra. It's got like real seeming people, great girls, great bars, great restaurants and culture. Just a great looking city. I praise you, Chicago. And in the movies, Chicago has been the location for so many classic movies. The sleazebag John Landis's The Blues Brothers from 1980. Brian De Palma's The Untouchables with a classic line from Sean Connery's policeman character. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way. Oh, that's so good. Also, 1983's classic Risky Business with Tom Cruise and Rebecca De Mornay, directed by Paul Brickman in his directorial debut, who just kind of was uncomfortable with the movie business, and he basically walked away from Hollywood, which I kind of admire. And if you walk away from something because of your values or principles or whatever, then bravo to you. I mean, you're a rare breed. I mean, the only kind of principles we have these days are the ones that are running high schools. And everyone should have like a hill to die on, you know, something you'd be willing to fight for, even at great cost. So I kept up running here and there, but eventually started going to a gym to work out, which I've stuck with. And with all my recent moves over the years, one of the first things I do is to look for a gym. It's essential. I mean, everyone knows exercise is good for you, but it can just give life a structure. It can become like a church, you know? And I try to use a trainer occasionally just to mix up my workouts. I've had some great trainers and some turkeys, but the best trainer, you know, they know how to train, but more importantly, they're enjoyable and they're like personable. I mean, a great trainer can almost be like a therapist at times. Sometimes the workout is secondary just, you know, to the verbal interaction. When I was in Washington, D.C., Jesus, after this breakup, my poor trainer had to listen to my ruminating and despairing over and over and over. And you know what? He always listened and cheered me up. He gave me perspective. But he was just like a friend, you know? And I don't care how qualified a personal trainer you are. If you don't enjoy interacting with the person, then get another trainer. It's like I had to try a few therapists before I settled on the one I've had for years. What, you're asking? Me need therapy? Shocking, I know, right? But really, it's just like talking to a friend. You can be completely honest with them. I mean, every single person could use therapy. If nothing else, that's just to interact honestly with someone. And if you're not going to be 100% honest with your therapist, okay, maybe 90% honest, but if not, then don't waste your money. I was talking to someone the other day at dinner, and it was just kind of funny. I was like, you know, we're about, you know, I'm about 90% honest with my, even my closest friend. It's like there's that 10% that no one will ever know about. It's too weird to reveal, or just, it's just too personal or too embarrassing or something. So it's like we always are holding back a bit. I try not to hold back much, but you know, there's some things that must remain unsaid. A few sports or exercise-based movies. Let's see here. 1983's Personal Best, directed by the Ultimo powerhouse writer Robert Town. He of screenwriter fame for like 1974's Chinatown and Jack Nicholson's 1973's The Last Detail. And just one of my favorites, The Yakuza from 1974, directed by pro as hell Sidney Pollack, with Robert Mitchum as a retired detective who's called on to help an old friend in Japan to locate his friend's daughter. The screenplay was written by Robert Town and, hold on to your hats, wait for it, no, not Stacey Keach, but Paul Schrader. Coincidence? I think not. Oh, wait, that doesn't really make sense. But anyway, The Yakuza is just epic. It, like, looks great. It's a tale of revenge and forgiveness. It's emotional, but also badass. I mean, Robert Mitchum, come on now. But anyway, back to Personal Best. It's a drama, kind of love story about athletes training for the Olympics. It's kind of interesting, and it's kind of an early movie to deal with kind of a lesbian plot element. It's with Mariel Hemingway and the grizzled Scott Glenn. Every time I see Scott Glenn, I still kind of confuse him for a moment with the late David Carradine. I mean, come on, they kind of look similar, right? And let's not speak of David Carradine's bizarro demise. Look that up if you want to, but it'll just put some weird shit in your head. The fantastic The Longest Yard from 1974, directed by solid as a rock Robert Aldrich and produced by the legend Alfred S. Ruddy. This stars one of my heroes, Burt Reynolds, and Eddie Albert plays the sadistic warden. Burt Reynolds is like a washed-up ex-quarterback in prison, and he's organizing a football team to battle the team made up of prison guards. It's just incredible, touching, funny. It's a total must-see. And A Curiosity is 1985's Perfect, directed by the great James Bridges, but this one was kind of a bomb, kind of a misfire. It has Jamie Lee Curtis and John Travolta, with John Travolta as a reporter investigating fitness clubs. He falls in love with an aerobics instructor played by Jamie Lee Curtis. It's not great, but it's got some kind of goofy appeal and some, you know, so bad they're good moments. I just remember the scene where, like, John Travolta is in, like, really tight shorts and he's kind of, like, shaking his dick around or something. I don't know. It's weird. But Travolta has, you know, some charisma, and Jamie Lee Curtis just looks great. And while on John Travolta, I was talking with a coworker the other day, and I mentioned the funniest shit Oscars moment where Travolta butchered the name of someone he was introducing. He was about to introduce a song that was going to be performed by Idina Menzel. Yes, she does have a weird name. But anyway, Travolta's like reading the teleprompter very, you know, earnestly, and he's like, here to perform the Oscar-nominated, gorgeously empowering song Let It Go from the movie Frozen. Please welcome the wickedly talented one and only Adele Dazeem. It still cracks me up every time I watch it, I swear. I mean, Idina Menzel, Adele Dazeem, I don't know. I think he said his nerves got the best of him, or he just, any the teleprompter or something, but it's just so funny. He just totally blew it. And if there isn't a band named Adele Dazeem, there should be. contact me. We'll start one up. Our first hit could be called Teleprompter Blues. Anyway, as we approach the finish line, it's weird. Exercise has been a staple of my life. It's given me like motivation, and it's weird. My life alternates between like extremely healthy behaviors and then just some unhealthy shit now and again. It's kind of the yin to my yang. And we all kind of need to lose it sometimes, I think, whichever way you prefer. But yeah, exercise has become a healthy obsession. It's funny. So many people like I have turned to exercise after a breakup. And exercise kind of becomes your new companion. Yes, not as pleasant as a real companion, but, you know, she's always there for you and doesn't judge you. And it doesn't have to be a gym or whatever. It's all about movement, metaphorical and literal. As Dean Karnazes said, run when you can, walk if you have to, crawl if you must, just never give up. And it's nice to have like a healthy hobby or something like exercise because, you know, you'll never be disappointed or let down by it. And exercise will always be my side until the end, whenever or however I go out. My trusted companions, newspapers, supplements, movies, psilocybin, alcohol, and the gym. So let's end this with a paraphrased quote from the Batman TV show from the 1960s. Tune in next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And no, I'm not Batman or some kind of superhero. I'm just a man. And speaking of just a man, it is a fantastic song by the band Faith No More with the multi-octave, multi-talented lead singer Mike Patton. And anyway, there's a live performance of the song with a girls' choir doing backup vocals. And there's this moment that where Mike Patton is singing and stuff and the girls start singing. And then Mike Patton motions to like the sound man to like increase the girls' volume in the mix. It's like so pro, so classy, and just awesome. So yeah, check that out, and here's a little bit of that song. And every night I shut my eyes so I don't have to see the light shining so bright. I dream about a cloudy sky, about a cloudy sky. And every night I shut my eyes, but now I've got them open wide. You're falling into my hands, and now you're burning me. I say you're burning me.